From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2003 when a local radio host used racist language to describe Rochester's African-American mayor. The mayor was Bill Johnson. The broadcaster was not on these airwaves, of course. He was on Wham 1180, and I don't feel the need to bring up the exact racist language used. You can easily find it if you so desire. Now, in the days following those racist comments, there were calls for the broadcaster to resign or be fired. And eventually he was fired, albeit for a short while. The same station hired him back soon thereafter. But it's notable that Mayor Bill Johnson was not one of the people calling for the man's firing. Mayor Johnson had a different view about what is effective, what is just, what might lead to real growth. And so Bill Johnson might have some thoughts to share about the latest news that seems to include rather instant calls for firing every week somewhere in this country. Bill Johnson grew up in Virginia and just happened to be back in his native Virginia earlier this month when the firestorm erupted around Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Governor Northam has changed his story a few times, but the basic outline is that Northam's medical school yearbook contains a photo of a man dressed in blackface next to a man dressed as a Klansman. Initially, Northam apologized for being one of the two men in the photo. He later insisted that he was not in that photograph, but he did admit to wearing blackface on a separate occasion. Calls for Northam's resignation were swift and wide-ranging, including many Democratic presidential contenders. And it turns out that Virginia's Attorney General, Mark Herring, is now admitting that he, too, wore blackface as part of a costume. There have been calls for Herring to resign as well. So what happens next? Is it more just to remove anyone from office who has engaged in racist behavior in their past, or is it wiser to try to determine if that person has grown? Is this the end for Northam and Herring in Virginia? In a new poll from the Washington Post, white voters in Virginia narrowly prefer that Northam and Herring resign. But black voters in Virginia do not. 58% say there should be no resignation. Former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson, and again a Virginia native, is our guest in studio. And Mayor Johnson, I'm going to still call use the honorarium. It's easier for me. Welcome to Connections. Thank you for being here. Grab that microphone and get nice and close, if you could, there, Bill. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having this conversation. As I mentioned to you, I landed in Washington D.C. a week ago Friday, and as I was driving into the Commonwealth, the news broke about Governor Northam and. The retribution was swift because within minutes of that, people were calling for his resignation. So let me just say that you and I know that, you know, this kind of subject has troubled me going back to our own local situation between a broadcaster and our mayor. And I believe then that there should have been more conversation and not swift justice, because calling for somebody's resignation and the firing of that person sort of ends the conversation right there. And we need a broader conversation. We really need to begin to be more comfortable talking about race. And a lot of people, black and white, just don't want to talk about race. So, as you said, I'm a native-born Virginian. I was born there 77 years ago. Grew up in that state, educated in that state, and became a part of the cultural mores. It's it's hard to describe. I mean, people who were born in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and Louisiana, places like that, they have rigid lines. We had muddle lines. I mean,
What do you mean by that?
I mean that black and white people lived on the same streets, okay? I played with white kids. Okay. Now they got in trouble for playing with me when they went home. I never will forget that first time a kid who I'd been playing with said, "I can't play with you anymore." Okay. It didn't oppress me. I think I've done pretty well in my life since then. I went to all segregated schools. And to show you the anomaly of the situation, in 1994, when I was elected mayor, in 93, I was invited home for a big, rousing, congratulatory meeting. And there, the mayor of the city of Lynchburg gave me the key to the city. And it turns out he and I were the exact same age. I went to the all-black high school. About a mile and a half away, he went to the all-white high school. He was president of his student body. I was president of my student body. His father actually owned a business a big major automobile dealership right in the heart of the black community, okay? Our paths had never crossed. All those years, I was 51 years old when I was elected mayor, and I never met this man. And know what? I haven't seen him since. Even though he tells me he comes to Rochester every year for some bonsai tree festival, he's very much into bonsai tree. I said, Mayor, when you come to Rochester, I want to repay the courtesy. Come up and we'll have lunch. Never seen him, never heard from him. But that's just, I didn't get offended by that. I just happen to know how things are. In the state which was the first state to introduce slavery into this civilization, in a state where voter oppression and suppression became legendary under the Byrd machine. And, you know, one thing about Virginia, it was more genteel in its relations with blacks than, say, the people down south in Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia. And you used to see scenes back in the 60s of raging white people trying to keep black kids out of going to school, screaming vulgarities, never mind that governors standing in schoolhouse doors like George Wallace and Ross Barnett. You didn't see that in Virginia. We were genteel, but not no less.
We had segregated schools.
Yes, and a segregated life. And in fact, Virginia created something called massive resistance to desegregation back in the 1950s under the Byrd machine. So that the minute any institution was threatened with desegregation, it was completely shut down. Schools, parks, any public facility, and created and then became all white as private institutions using public money. I think I mentioned to you Liberty University, which now exists as the largest private university in this country, started as a segregation academy in Lynchburg, Virginia, back in the 1960s under Jerry Falwell. So so I'm hearing this news, and I'm seeing, when I get to my destination, I see the picture. I see a man in blackface.
Again, it's a few Fridays ago now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man in blackface, man in a Ku Klux Klan hood. And then the governor coming out later that evening and apologizing for being on that picture. Now, I've been around politics for a long time, and I've tried very hard not to become inculcated in that culture, but I know how it operates. And let me just tell you, I find it absolutely amazing and almost improbable that picture could have existed for 32 years. And Ralph Northam running for election, including running for governor in 2017, against a Republican. I cannot believe that picture was not discovered before now. And it leads me to believe that the source of it, which is a right-wing Breitbart kind of publication that brought this out, not so much to embarrass the governor for his racial inclinations. Let me tell you, if we were running a purity test, half of the Virginia state legislature would have to resign because I'm sure in their backgrounds they've got incidences like this. And it was just the way it was. People wearing this kind of stuff, all right? So I'm saying, hold up. Now, let me just tell you, I was a little bit thrown off course the next morning when the governor tried to defend himself. So, that wasn't me on the picture, but oh, by the way, I did do blackface and I did Michael Jordan. Well, here's
Michael Jackson.
Here's the irony. If you're gonna do Michael Jackson, my friend, you put powder on your face because Michael Jackson was going through that period trying to be lighter skinned. Than darker. See, there's just a lot of inexplicable situations here. And if Ralph Northam had resigned, as people were pressuring him to do on Friday night and Saturday, Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor, would have been governor. And he has his own unique, different kind of a problem, which certainly has to be, in my mind, adjudicated. And then If Fairfax were forced out of office, then the Attorney General,
Mark Herring,
has his own blackface problem. So what do you do? Do you undo the will of the voters of Virginia and within a year turn the leadership of the state over to Republicans? The voters soundly repudiated the Republican Party
in
the 2017 election. So I think, Evan, these are the kinds of questions. But let me just say that this is going to play itself out. Because a because Ralph Northam is digging himself in and hoping and believing that he can somehow lead a crusade of reconciliation on racial discussions. And he might certainly be a person that in this position is capable of doing that. I mean, the Bible speaks liberally of forgiveness and reconciliation. And the Bible also says something, I think it's in the book of James, that says, let he without sin cast the first stone. So that's what I'm saying. We got this gotcha mentality now in politics. And I don't think if people are trying to get to a state of purity, that may not be possible. And that is not in any way to condone bad behavior. I certainly think that the lieutenant governor has to be able to, if he wants an investigation, he's maintaining his innocence. And certainly the women who are at the center of these allegations are just as fervent in their statements that he and faculty engaged in these bad acts. There's a way, there's a medium, I think, for adjudicating those facts. And it's either in a court of law or it's some sort of a legal proceeding where both sides can put their case and their sides out. I just don't think people ought to just give in to the lynch mob and just walk away.
So, Bill, when it comes to, let's just take blackface as an example. If you were shown two pictures, and I'm being hypothetical now, but let's say it's the 1980s, and you have two white college students, and in one of the photos, a white college student is in blackface in a clear minstrel-like depiction, intentionally demeaning.
Yes.
No question about it. And the other picture, it's a law school student, a white student, whose hero was Thurgood Marshall, and he dresses in blackface and goes as Thurgood Marshall for Halloween, and had a Thurgood Marshall quote in his yearbook because he said, that's the man that I admire the most. Would you view those as equally reprehensible today?
Well, I think we have to dig a little deeper and say in the customs that attack, in the place. Let me just say this. I'm not trying to defend it, and I'm not.
I don't hear you defending blackface.
I've not been in any situation where I've seen a white person in blackface, okay? I just know. And if I did, I would be very outraged,
yeah.
And I would express
yeah.
my outrage if yeah. I saw that, all right? But I don't know if there's some kind of equivalence here. I mean, I'm trying to weigh it. I hear people saying the attorney general deserves some credit for coming out voluntarily. He didn't come out voluntarily. He came out defensively because somebody must have reminded him that there's some evidence that he too was in blackface.
Sure.
Remember, he was calling for the governor's swift removal from office. And then all of a sudden he had to back up because somebody said, oh, remember now, you too have your own blackface problem. So I don't really want to try to give one more credit than the other.
No,
give
I hear
one
that.
A break. I mean, both of them. And you have to ask the question, which people who live in New York and people who are Northerners might find very puzzling. But what was it in the water? What was it in the environment? Now, we're talking about, if they'd have said to me that these pictures went back to the 50s or the 40s, then I think that while they were still reprehensible, they were clearly in the context would have been more explicable. Here, you can't understand why a person who was born in the 1960s, born during the Civil Rights era, okay, I don't care what part of Virginia he or she lived in, they certainly were conscious of the movement of civil rights that were going on. A man who was in medical school and who presumably, because that school existed to serve low-income patients, so that a man who would essentially have some black patients, why would he want to put that kind of picture on his page? Now, he claims he doesn't know how it got there. There are people who said it got there because he made it happen. He gave him the picture, all right? He claims he doesn't remember. I would tell you this. I wouldn't forget something like that.
I wouldn't think I would either.
And so, I mean, the whole thing just begs for some credibility here. What is it? But I think he sees his life going before his eyes very, very fast and is trying his best to hold on and saying, I can make something of it. Now, I referred you to, and I'm sure you've had a chance to read it, the op-ed piece that was Reverend William Barber published in the Washington Post last Friday, which, by the way, I just went and printed out all of the responses to that op-ed piece, and I haven't found a negative response yet. All right, everybody was saying, wow, this is really where we are. So people seem to be saying the message that Reverend Barber's putting out is, look, let's put these things in perspective. And yeah, he said, blackface is bad, but let me tell you who I got a bigger problem with, contemporary politicians who are trying to oppress people from voting, okay? Those are the people that we need to be holding into better accounts, people who are passing policies that restrict the freedom of people like, you know, immigrants and the like. So Reverend Barber sets forth this whole notion of reconciliation and rather than repudiation, all right, which I think we ought to really be focusing more on in our current environment.
So the reason I brought up the difference in blackface is not because I'm sitting here saying some blackface is okay. I bring it up because when I was growing up, so I grew up in, sometimes I say it's the Pittsford of Cleveland. You know, it's a wealthy, mostly white, upper middle class suburb. And I certainly never learned about blackface growing up. I was in a bubble, again, a mostly white bubble. So when people say, and sometimes I've had African-American friends say, like, how could you not know? You can't get to college. You can't get to medical school. You can't get to adulthood and not know this. And my answer to that is, you can. We have a society that's very very bubbled and sort of safe for white people, that you could do that. It's possible. I probably didn't know. I never dressed in blackface, and I would never think I could possibly look back and say, well, I or anyone in my friend group would dress the way Northam or whoever was in that picture with a very minstrel-looking blackface and then a Klan's robe. I mean, that's just horrifying, and I would hope that's horrifying.
Yeah.
But for people who impersonate, to go for Halloween as Michael Jordan or Michael Jackson or Thurgood Marshall and not realize that simply using makeup on your face to make yourself look a different race actually has hurtful connotations, I can understand a lot of white people not getting that, because I didn't know what redlining was until I was almost 30 years old.
Yeah.
Our educational system has, you know, got a lot of cracks and failures.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the conversation. That doesn't mean that it's okay, but that means what I would want to know now is, you know, I don't know about that Northam picture is beyond for me, but Mark Herring, okay, if you went as Michael Jackson, what do you know now? Let's have a conversation now before I call for your resignation. How do you feel about that?
And that's precisely the point. That's precise. I think that rather than just chop somebody's head off, I think you really need to have the conversation. But remember now, a lot of this get rid of Northam mentality is being driven by the National Democratic Party and people who would see themselves as candidates for president in 2020, because they've already have a no tolerance. Think about Al Franken, okay, and Senator Gillibrand's role in excommunicating Al Franken, which I happen to think is absolutely horrendous on her part. I think she, because the man was never given a chance to really explain. It was, hey, the allegation is made, you know, it's sexual in nature, you know, you're a predator, go, all right? I'm not supporting predation, and I'm not supporting it. I'm just saying that we still live in a country where innocence exists until guilt is proven. And in this environment, nobody really wants to take the time to get to the bottom line. I think that you look at these situations, you look at these adult men, and you say to yourself, how could you engage in this kind of behavior? And how could the rest of us not be aware? Well, let me just flip the other side of the coin, all right? I grew up in an era where there were black comedians like Moms Mabley and Pigmeat Markham and Red Fox before he went establishment and went on television as Sanford and Sons, all right? And these people recorded albums, and they went to black clubs, and they told some of the most horrendous black jokes. I mean, where black people were the object of the joke. And these offensive words were coming out of black people's mouths, okay? So none of us come into this discussion here with clean hands. But I don't want the standards of the 1960s to be what determines, you know, my position. I mean, I ought to have a right, you ought to have a right to live down our past bad behavior. We ought to have a right to put our record as adults and our contribution to society. One of the things I feel badly about Bill Cosby, and Bill Cosby now, think about it. Bill Cosby not sitting in prison today because somebody said he should go to prison. He went to trial, all right? And there were lots of people who came out and attested to the fact that as a young man, he the way he could have sex with women was to drug them and knock them out, all right?
That's criminal, isn't it?
That's criminal.
Of course.
But how do you then balance what the man did in his later life as a humanitarian, as a contributor? You know, that man educated probably more black young people than any individual in this country. I mean, maybe he was trying to make, a redress for his bad behavior. But how do you not allow somebody to at least say, look at my record? I mean, yes, I did bad when I was young, all right? All of us did something bad when we were young.
But you're not saying Bill Cosby shouldn't go to prison, are you?
No, but I'm saying Bill Cosby went to prison after he went to trial. He did not go because a lynch mob dragged him to prison. He went to trial.
I mean, it's pretty clear that he did those things to those women, though, right?
Well, he got convicted of one of them.
I would think that, yeah, yeah.
All right, but I'm not here to make a case to exonerate Bill Cosby. All I'm saying is that his case and Justin Fairfax's case suggest to me that you go to trial.
Yeah.
That you confront your accuser.
Okay.
And you have a right to defend yourself.
I hear you now. So I think what I'm hearing you say is there are going to be cases where the rush to judgment might be end up after a trial or a vetting, to be accurate. And there might be times where there's a rush to judgment. We look back and say, whoa, we were off the mark there. But it seems like you're uncomfortable with the rush to judgment, period.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I would not want to be held responsible in 2019 for something that I did in 1959. Pure and simple. When I was a teenager.
But if you haven't changed...
I would want people to look at me and say, he's come a long way since that time. He has made amends. And you have to admit to it. You have to confess it. Yes, I did it. If confronted with it, I didn't mean it. I did it. I was immature. But I think that my adult life has been the exact opposite of what I was as an adolescent. And I ought to have an opportunity to make that case.
So right now you feel like the culture is, once we figure that find out you've done something wrong, you don't get a chance to describe.
The mere allegation is like a death sentence. The mere allegation is like a death sentence. And I speak to this as a person who has some passing acquaintance with Christian values. I mean, you know, I was raised in the church, and I was made to understand, you know, and my mother used to say one thing to me, you know, I'm not saying you don't do anything wrong. Don't let me catch you doing something wrong, okay? Because there's a price to pay. And she reinforced that rule throughout my adolescent life. And there are things that I was not able to enjoy because my mother was making a point. You did something you had to pay penance for, okay? So, I'm way beyond that. I'm way beyond that, okay? And I think that one has to, and I guess the other point here is this, and there are purists who say blackface, that's a horrible crime. And it is, all right? But is it the worst possible thing that a person could do, all right? And in the case of Reverend Barber, he seems to be saying he's willing to equate somebody who is holding back other people who are oppressing and suppressing people, as opposed to the act of some mockery or mimicry, which is what blackface was. Like I said, I've never been around anybody who put on blackface. I don't understand it. All right. And it's been a long time, really, speaking since we've had any real discussion about people in blackface. They just don't do it anymore, all right? And I hope that your listeners and you understand why this is kind of important to me. And let me just say, it's very interesting that the Washington Post poll that just came out reflects the public opinion that was being stated throughout the news. There were black people who went to school, medical school, with Ralph Northam. They were his colleagues in medical school, either with him or behind him. They said, I never saw any evidence of racism in this man. Nobody can go back and point to anything in his public life that would be anywhere close to being racist, even mildly or blatantly. And yet, the man who ran, who wanted to run for governor, the man who ran for Senator, Corey Stewart, one of the most blatant racists, you know, and now he's repudiating it. He's saying, oh, I'm not going to run that kind of campaign anymore. He ran it. He ran it willingly. And he thoroughly enjoyed what he was saying and doing. Okay. Donald Trump, people say, oh, you know, and you know, Evan, I meant to go back and look it up so I could quote it precisely. But in Buffalo a couple of years ago, what's the businessman's name? He was on the school board.
Carl Paladino.
Carl Paladino made one of the most offensive statements about the sitting president of the United States and his wife, all right, equating them with bestiality and saying that neither one of them were true humans. He said that. And I watched and waited for the white Republican establishment in Buffalo to repudiate this man. Oh, you know, he's a great developer. Oh, you know, he has his point. Those were horrible. And I would say to Carl Paladino, if I ever had the opportunity to see him face to face, Mr. Paladino, would you want somebody to call your wife and your daughter, what you call the First Lady of the United States, would you sit back and say, oh, they have a right under free speech to say that? I doubt he would take that position. And what I see in too many instances are white people that I know, because I move in these circles. I know a lot of them. I have colleagues, and I have lots of white friends. And it just bugs me to see their silence in the face of such awfulness, of such ugliness, that they don't feel the need to speak out. Donald Trump needs to be repudiated every day for what he says. And many people are willing to look at it and say, oh, but he gave me a good tax cut. Oh, he's fighting to keep, you know, to get jobs back. That man is a bigot, all right? Whatever he wants to say, he may not be a bigot, but he says and does a lot of bigoted, racist things.
I want to do a couple of things here before we get to some listener feedback with former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson. I want to ask you specifically, just to remind our listeners, you did not call for the firing of the talk show host who made racist remarks about you.
Not only that.
Why didn't you? And I'm not challenging you saying you should have, but I want to understand, why did you not join the chorus locally calling for his firing?
Well, it's a very complicated story, and I notice you're not calling his name, so I won't either.
It doesn't matter to me.
But Lonsberry and I have had a complicated history, and for when he was on Channel 10, he had a commentary on Channel 10. He was writing a column for the Democrat and Chronicle, and he was on Wham. He was really one of the most powerful journalists in this town. And I thought many times he misused his platform. And he and I have spoken directly about that. All right, but he used to go around and say I was the one who caused him to be fired at Channel 10 and the DNC, which was an absolute lie. All right. So why complicate that? But what I wanted, and I spoke to the management over at WHAM and said, take him off the air and let he and I talk. And he had to actually come to my office and sit with me face to face, just the two of us, nobody to protect either one of us. And we talked. And I found Bob Lonsberry, I call him an interesting guy. You know, he roars in one instance. He's very thoughtful in another instance. You know, I can't put him in the same category as some of these other right-wingers, all right? And I've read some of his stuff. He goes out of his way to be thoughtful. But I also view what he's doing as entertainment. He has an audience that he's trying to appeal to. But in the case of He and Me, we talked about why what he said was not appropriate. Let me tell you, Brother Weeze, people forget this. Brother Weeze had a habit of calling me, or what's the guy's name on Sanford and Son? I forget it now. I went on his show, all right? Sat with him just like I'm talking to you. And I told him, I said, I don't know why you keep calling me that. Well, you know, you look like him. No, I don't. But that's not my name anyway, all right? You might not want to call me Mayor, but you can call me by my name. Don't call me, you know. So I have long believed that you get to the root cause of a problem by confronting it head on, not by casting aspersions, not by threatening some bad outcome for somebody. And in my case, it's worked.
That's how you've opened doors.
Yes.
Did the current mayor, when Mayor Warren called for the firing of the meteorologist, was that a mistake?
She and I talked about it, and I gave her my assessment. She was very emphatic at the beginning, but you know, she's reached out. She's talked about reconciliation and coming together and turning darkness into light. She's without outrightly saying that what she said was wrong or shouldn't have happened, she at least has been able to take a different path and reach out to Mr. Capel. And hopefully at some point, very soon, they'll sit down with each other and they'll talk, because he talks to everybody else about it. I mean, I've been going online looking at his videos and everything. He's talked a great deal about his belief that we shouldn't be at this place. We should not be at a place of divide. So my hope is that the right circumstances will come and the two of them will sit down and come to a better understanding.
Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson in studio with us. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can also email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Coming up in our second hour, my guest Liz Alpern and Jeffrey Yaskowitz, co-authors of the Gefilte Manifesto. They're in Rochester from Brooklyn for a few more hours, and they're with us on Connections talking about their book, their recipes, their ideas on Jewish cooking, culture, tradition in the kitchen, why we lose it over time, and how to breathe new life into it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Producer Megan Mack pulled up Carl Palladino's quotes. I don't even know. Is it worth reading just for the context? Do you want to remember what exactly
yeah, because I
meant
to do that.
He was asked what he wanted to see go away in 2017, back in 2016, and Mr. Palladino answered, "I'd like Michelle Obama to go away. I'd like her to return to being a male and let loose in the outback of Zimbabwe, where she lives comfortably in a cave with Maxie the gorilla." He also wrote that he hoped President Obama would die of mad cow disease.
Yes.
I mean, this is an adult human in a position of power and authority. That's not somebody who's blunt. That's not somebody who's direct. That's someone who is saying racist things or clearly is racist.
And not suffering any consequence.
No consequence.
Among
his
peers. That's my point. His peers should have outrightly repudiated him.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and get some of your feedback here. This is Rich in Rochester first. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, Evan. How you doing?
Good.
Hello, Mayor Johnson.
How you doing, sir?
All right. In listening to this conversation and also dealing with, you know, watching this over the last week, my first reaction, and it still has not changed, is that I forget what age the mayor was. Was he 20, 21?
Who?
Somewhere in there. And not to excuse his actions, but if it's, all grow and we all change. Mm-hmm. And I think his mistake was to not have just complete contrition and just say, you know what? I was a stupid 20-year-old kid. Got caught up in hanging out with my buddies and I did some really dumb things. But I didn't mean to hurt anybody and just apologize. I think that's where these people go wrong. But I just cannot see throwing this man out. I don't see where this is, where that is necessary. Also, look at the source and look at the people who have spent all this time finding this. Just like you said, Palladino was one of the most racist people I've ever heard. And to say, and I know, Evan, you equivocated while he said racist things.
No. I don't mean to equivocate. I mean, and that's pretty indicative firmly of a racist. So I don't mean to equivocate.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because people's language is who they are. And if you're 40, 50 years old, you're a businessman, you've matured, and you're an adult, and you've lived in this world, that's who you are. You don't use that language, and you don't use it with the level of impunity that he used, unless he's that. So I don't have any problem with this mayor staying in place at all. I don't see. And as a young black man, as a black man who's seen some really horrible things in my life, I don't feel... I think what was done was offensive at the level of what it was at the time. But I have to give a 20-year-old or a 23-year-old that level of grace. I just have to, because I, at 20, 21 years old, there's some things I did that I would never want anybody to know I did.
Yeah.
They weren't horrific and criminal. And what he did was not criminal. We got to stop talking about it as criminal. I don't find it as criminal. Mm-hmm. I find it as morally reprehensible, but criminal, no.
Well, Rich, thank you. I think, Mayor, it surprises some people that the polling from the Washington Post in the state of Virginia shows that by a margin of 58 to 37, black Virginians do not want their governor to resign, despite the blackface scandal. By a margin of 48 to 46, white Virginians do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that people, that poll was taken a week after the initial announcement. I think people have had time to reflect on it. I think they also understand the consequences of what happens if the governor resigns, because there's no clear path to succession, all right? And the Democratic Party in Virginia has worked very, very hard to make that state more progressive, to elect more progressive politicians. The man sitting behind him to be governor could not be described progressive, all right? So I think people are now sobered by the outcome of this. And I think Rich's point is well taken. You know, you've got to have some forgiveness here and understand. He's a little bit older than 21, Rich. He was 25. He'd already gone through undergrad. If he'd done this in undergraduate school, then one would say, oh, okay, he was under the influence of something that wasn't good. But even so, I think that somebody has got to be willing to extend some forgiveness in this situation. I think a lot of the voters of Virginia are at that point now.
All right, Alice in Rochester is next. Alice, go ahead.
Hi. I heard this morning on the radio a commentator make a verbal mistake. They referred to something about Nelson Mandela. And I thought, oh, my God, it's the same mistake with a different name. You take the first letter of one word and you jam it on to the end of the first syllable of the next word because you're reading out loud.
Yeah.
Really fast.
Yeah.
And then I thought... Well, I will say, and it just happened to be the wrong two names. I mean, King Jr. comes out to the wrong thing and really hits a nerve. And that's why the phones didn't all light up this morning from this other mistake. The thing is, although I do agree with Mayor Warren's decision to ask that the meteorologist be fired, and I think it's sad that an innocent man had a career loss because of something that had nothing to do with racism. It was simply has thing to do with what happens when you're reading out loud. I've done reading out loud. I know how it happens. On the other hand, I'm so happy that there is this ferment and that people are oversensitive right now. Because when I think about how many people have lost jobs and lives because of being the wrong color in the wrong place, what we're doing now, painful as it is incredibly valuable. And I certainly hope the meteorologist gets a good job elsewhere.
He will.
And
he will. Yeah. That's the history of this country. That's the history of this country. And I don't mean to be flippant or dismiss it. I mean,
yeah,
I know.
No,
some,
I understand. Yeah.
But Jeremy Campbell is not going to be hungry. Yeah. You know, he and his family are going
to
be fine.
I am happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And I think Governor Northam should stay in office. But on the other hand, I am so glad that this all is happening because it so badly needs to.
Well, can I ask you one quick question, Allison? And I'll turn it over to former Mayor Johnson, if you don't mind. You know, because I know when you're thinking about what you heard with Jeremy Campbell, maybe you were surprised. Maybe in the days after that remark came out and there was all this backlash, maybe you were surprised. Maybe you thought, whoa, that sounded like just an honest mistake. I want for a second you to think about something that I've been thinking about, having worked in commercial television news in this city. Which is that if we can speak monolithically about communities, and I try not to, I mean, to the extent that there's a black community, there's still disagreement within communities. But to the extent that you can speak monolithically, if the black community did not have any patience for what Jeremy Campbell said, I think that is tied to, well, we have to ask, well, why didn't they give the benefit of the doubt? Is it because local commercial television news on a nightly basis in their first and second blocks of news fills them up with shots fired in Rochester, stabbing on a street in Rochester, no context, no information that gives you anything other? Was it interpersonal? Was this a random person walking out of a store? What are some of the root causes? What's underpinning all of this? That doesn't happen. I participated in that for 11 years. So maybe we were surprised, but can we be surprised that people of color wouldn't really have a lot of capital stored up to kind of give the benefit of the doubt to local television news? Does that at least register?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I was not surprised, and I could see the reason. And, you know, it's not, again, when I'm saying it's sad and an innocent person, you know, it's not an innocent society. And in the context of what's going on now, I can absolutely see the reason for a really strong reaction.
Yeah. Thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, the problem in this situation and so many others is people's rush to choose sides. And the human beings, going back to the last callers, instinct to protect themselves and not to admit wrong, okay? I see this happen over and over and over again, and it's very, very hard for us to sit down and say, yes, you did this. Now, why don't we just clear it out of the way and let's move on? And the question is, how to prevent it from happening in the future, okay? Because you can't go back and take it back. But there's this instinct for self-protection where people just cannot bring themselves to state the obvious. And this is the kind of conversation I think we need to begin having, particularly for our young people, all right? And I think we have to go away from this reflex notion that I heard, you know, Jeremy Campbell being interviewed by a radio person, and he immediately said, you're a victim of reverse discrimination. That was a huge jump in that circumstance, all right? Mr. Campbell has been temporarily inconvenienced, but everything I see of him is, I'm not seeing him going to any food shelters. I'm saying I think that he's got a GoFundMe page.
He's going to be fine.
And other things, okay? He's going to be fine, but the situation, the underlying problem will still exist because nobody really wants to sit down and work through it. And that's what we have. That's what we really have to do.
Yeah, and is there an argument, Bill, that if he had stayed in that position, stayed in the job, that there weren't calls to fire him, but there were calls to say, even if you didn't intend to cause harm, let's talk about why this hurts. Let's talk about the history. Let's talk about what, you know, frankly, what, you know, sort of bubbled white kids don't often get taught. Did we miss a chance there?
Yeah. I think we do, because it's like the minute you call somebody a racist, the conversation ends. People choose their sides. And I know, I'm not going to have this conversation with you. And, you know, I know there are people who work in the field who feel very strongly that you've got to really attack this problem. You really have got to attack this problem. But I was reading a piece, it was kind of a year old, in Atlantic the other day on the plane, and it was really about white conservatives and their reaction to being instinctively labeled racist for that position. I mean, they can justify their views about conservatism and fiscal conservatism and people need to work and earn opportunity. And other people can say, there are just too many barriers. I mean, you know, progressives say, you got to break these barriers down. I think that the conversation is missing, all right? And the thing that concerns me is what I hear from some of my progressive white friends whose family members are not as progressive as they. And they kind of stun me with the level of conversation, particularly when Obama was president, all right, that these conversations were going on behind closed doors. And they were ugly and they were defensive. And we got to protect ourselves from this guy, all right, because he's going to take everything that we worked hard away from us and give it to these undeserving people. And I would rather have that conversation out in the open. Let's confront it with facts, all right? And we can't because people are behind their fortresses and they don't want to reveal themselves. If I talk like this openly, you're going to call me a racist, all right? Evan, that I think, I've been working in civil rights for the last almost 50 years, and there's no way back in the 1970s when I started this work that I would think that in approaching 2020, 50 years later, not only will we still be having this conversation, but it will be more intense. In some respects, it's more intense today than it was when people's houses were being bombed and people were being shot at. You know, it is just stunning to me that, you know, as I leave this earth, I can say we haven't made any progress on the area of race relations. We really have not. And I think that that's really very disturbing.
You're not leaving yet. Don't go anywhere yet.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, good. Leon, next in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Leon.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. How's everyone doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a quick comment from one of the previous callers that mentioned that the state of that we are in today, it's probably a good thing that we're so overly sensitive and overly quick to condemn anyone with even the smallest indication of either racism, sexism, or whatever it may be, anyone of the isms. And I heard you mention, Mayor Johnson, is that through this whole entire process, we don't have those critical discussions. Mm-hmm. Where we can't openly state what we feel without being persecuted. And I think that's the main reason why people don't want to talk about these things, because the minute you talk, you're labeled, and then the conversation is over. And there's no chance for growth and understanding and getting a common ground. And I blame this a lot on our media and our politics. They keep this division. I think that's the only way, you know, both parties can maintain power is by keeping division. That's the basis of any conqueror. You have to divide the population to be able to keep control.
Yeah.
So,
just let me jump in, Leon, because we're going to run out of time. Thank you, Leon. I mean, without taking a position on Ralph Northam, for example, I'm the host of the show. My opinion on that doesn't matter. But to Leon's point, it does seem like we just draw into two sides. Do you think he should be fired or keep his job? Yep. And if you think he should keep his job or be allowed to maybe keep his job, you think what he did is okay, as opposed to what he did was terrible. But maybe we don't just immediately call for firing. And so Leon's sort of seeing this way of shutting things down. It's similar to the concerns you've had, Bill.
Yeah. And part of the muddle is that the governor caused it himself. You know, even when he came out and apologized, he never said which one of those two he was. He said...
And now claims he's neither.
He's neither. But that night, he said, I apologize for being on that picture.
Yep.
Okay. And so if he wants to lead us down a path of reconciliation, he got to do what the old folks say down south, you know, down in church. He got to go to mourner's bench and he got to confess his sins.
That's restorative justice.
Yes.
Right?
And then he's got a right now to take leadership.
Yeah.
But he's got to confess to his sins.
That's restorative justice. We hear all about restorative justice, suspend lesson schools, circle up face to face, talk to each other, which the evidence says is more effective anyway than just purely punitive.
Yes.
But the second we hear of a yearbook photo from 30 years ago, it's like, there's no restorative justice. You will be excommunicated. Sheila writes to us and just says, Mayor Johnson shows what many protesters in this discussion, both here and in Virginia, are lacking. Patience, a willingness to understand, interact, and converse, and to find common ground. Thanks for discussing knee-jerk decision-making and trial by social media. 30 seconds. It doesn't mean, Bill, that every time we open the door to reconciliation and progress, that people walk through it. You just want to, it sounds to me like you want to keep that door open to give people the chance.
You said it better than I could, Evan. That's absolutely right.
Well, I'm your student. I'm listening all out.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you'll keep coming back here, Bill. I always appreciate the conversation, and I have a long list of email from listeners as well who greatly appreciate your perspective.
Thank you. So. Thank you so much.
Short break. More connections coming up.